Welcome to Festival Showcase. My name is Matt Erickson. I'm now talking to pianist Orly Shaham. Ms. Shaham will be one of many performers on the stage at Harris Concert Hall tonight as she helps celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Aspen Center for Physics. Ms. Shaham, welcome.
Thank you.
You and Gil Shaham, your brother, violinist, and you have another sibling named...
Shai Shaham, yeah.
All three of you grew up in the shadow of the Aspen Center for Physics because your parents were physicists, is that correct?
Yeah, our father was a physicist, and we were definitely physics brats growing up.
Physics brat, like an army brat.
That's it.
So what is it like being a physics brat here in Aspen?
Well, you know, our family started coming because our dad was at the Physics Institute long before we had association with the festival. In fact, long before any of us started to play a musical instrument. So we were here as very little kids, as infants. You know, my first swimming experiences were at the Jerome when I was maybe 1 year old. Mm-hmm. In the days when they used to give lessons to kids at the Jerome. I don't think they do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Physics Center was just, that was the focus of our time here. And over the years, you know, we got to love those physics picnics, which they have. Only as I got older did I start going to the physics talks, you know, the talks for families, which are just incredible, brilliant, and so wonderful at explaining things, even if you really don't have a grasp of any of the concepts before you've come in. Mm-hmm. And I was definitely a physics brat. You know, it's like an old joke. How do you know I was a physics brat? By the time I was about 10, the first thing I wanted to do when we landed in Aspen was get to the Physics Center so I could get my bike. Because the Physics Center did have a few kids' bikes I'm sure they still do, that they would give out to the children of the physicists. And mm-hmm. if you got there early enough in the summer, you would get your pick.
Right.
So clearly the definition of a spoiled physics brat.
Now, your brother Gil would take lessons with Dorothy DeLay mm-hmm. when he was here. And I guess those lessons began, I assume, early teens, or
I think the first time Gil studied with Miss DeLay, he would have been around 10 years old, yeah, something like that.
And for you as a pianist, how did the music festival become a part of your life?
When we moved to the States, we had actually been coming to Aspen from Israel every summer for the Physics Institute, so it really does draw people from all over the world. And when we moved to the States that first summer, it just made so much more sense to come to Aspen as a student. I already played piano. It was kind of a late decision. So the first summer I was here then, I took lessons with Nancy Stessen, with Herbert Stessen's wife. And I wasn't officially a student. But by the next year, I became officially a student. And I think really of the three kids in my family, I became much more the Aspen kid because I was the youngest. So I started already with the festival at age 7. And I kept coming every year pretty much since then of my life, except for maybe 1 or 2 years that I didn't make it. And, you know, I at some point made the transition from coming as a student to coming as a guest performer. And it's just really been a part of my life for 30 years.
So this concert that we have to look forward to tonight, is it sort of giving back to the Center for Physics? Is that the idea, the fact that it's turning 50 and you want to give back to an institution that has helped you as a musician and as a person?
I think that's exactly right. I think, you know, when the Physics Institute approached us, the Physics Center approached us about doing this concert, we felt like, of course, we would do this for the Physics Center. We feel like we owe them so much. No small part of that being basic geography. The fact that it's so close to the tent mm-hmm. meant that if Dad went into work, it was so easy to come in and catch a rehearsal at the tent, and we worked that out. It made it so convenient. Mm. And, of course, there was so much always give and take intellectually. I mean, Aspen has become even more an intellectual town as time has gone by, but in the early 80s when that was just starting, there were just a few really incredible institutions in town. To have the physics and the music right next to each other was incredible.
So here you are back for this 50th anniversary, and you're going to be part of a concert or a recital that includes your brother Gil, violinist Stefan Jacquif, mm-hmm. A group of string players that are performing the Mendelssohn Octet. And the program, I should say, in total will be Mozart, Violin, Sonata in B-flat major, you will be playing the Opus 118 Brahms, mm-hmm. as well as the Mozart, the piano
yes.
part.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the Mendelssohn Octet, which is a very precocious piece by the German composer. How did you or someone devise this program?
You know, a lot of thanks to Asador Santurian at the music festival, who really helped us put it together. I think there are actually more physics brats than just me and Gil and Stéphane Jacquive, but it just worked out date-wise that we were the ones available to do this event. And so the idea to do the Mendelssohn Octet, for example, I just thought was spectacular. To have both Gil and Stéphane there playing, as well as this group, this is a rock star roster of string players.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be one of the best Mendelssohn Octets of your lifetime. I'm really looking forward to hearing it.
Mendelssohn, I think, wrote this piece at, what is it, age 16?
16, yeah.
So for you, what you're not, of course, a string player, but for you, what associations do you have with this music?
Well, I can tell you, I feel so strongly about the Mendelssohn Octet that as a chamber music programmer, I've tried to program it whenever I can, even though I don't get to play in it. So mm-hmm. that definitely says something. You know, it's really a masterpiece on so many levels. He gets a complete orchestral sound out of a group of eight musicians, and the piece itself is perfectly worked out in terms of proportions and melodies and just harmonic movement. It's really quite a tour de force, even if you don't consider how old he was when he wrote it.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Festival Showcase on Aspen Public Radio. I'm host Matt Erickson, speaking now to pianist Orly Shaham, who will perform this evening as part of a 50th year anniversary for the Aspen Center for Physics. Now let's talk about what you're going to be playing, the Violin Sonata in B-flat major by Mozart, which I guess is kind of a middle period work, if you could call it that.
Yeah, sort of early middle period. I think one of the reasons, you know, there's so many great Mozart sonatas, and in fact it was Asador's suggestion that it might be fun for me to play with Stéphane. We hadn't met before. And obviously I play with Gil a great deal, but it's kind of nice to put this combination together. And we talked about, well, which Mozart sonata should we play? And there's a story that the physicist Albert Einstein, who was a violinist, used to play this particular Mozart sonata. And apparently there's a recording of it. I've heard it's on YouTube, but I haven't been able to find it myself. But so that's actually why we went with this particular sonata. It happens to be one of the gems. Well, there really are all gems, mm-hmm. But it is one of the gems of the repertoire. But there is also a physics connection. you know, as one of our physicist friends from the Physics Center said, Einstein was a brilliant physicist, a violinist, not so much.
Still, it shows that he wanted to be a Renaissance man. That's quite something.
Absolutely.
Okay, then we have the Brahms Opus 118, which is very late in his life. People often use the word autumnal to describe late Brahms. Beautiful intermezzo that's part of this set. Can you just go through the set for us?
I adore this set. It's really some of the most incredible pieces ever written. And I find they work extremely well as a set, although parts of it are often excerpted. People play the A major intermezzo, which is really one of the most perfect pieces of music ever penned.
Mm-hmm.
And people play the ballade separately. But I really find that it works so well. He's worked out. There's almost a storyline, and I hate to put words into Brahms's mouth,
mm-hmm.
especially if he didn't specify them. But there's so much going on there. There's so many layers. One of the reasons I thought it would be appropriate for this evening is because it is so intelligently crafted. And there are so many layers. And I mean, you know, that people talk about the connection of math and music, or, you know, in by extension, physics and music all the time. But this is a perfect example of it.
Mm-hmm.
The layers of intricacy, the way he's built these pieces is really stunning. And they're, you know, they're already beautiful just on first hearing. But as you keep delving deeper and deeper into them, the mysteries are constantly revealing themselves. I mean, I think of a physicist like my father, for example, who was an astrophysicist, having a sense of the stars, you know, already seeing their beauty, but bit by bit getting further and further into what they are actually composed of and what's actually in them and how they work and how they connect to each other. Or, you know, there's some very exciting physics news in the news very recently, right? That mm-hmm. this new particle, this discovery, the idea that we already knew that's more or less what it would look like, but then suddenly it's there, and you can find more details about it and see more things about its beauty and why it works the way it does. And that's really, I find, especially late Brahms, but this set in particular has so much of that. So it begins with essentially a prelude. There is a little bit, because it is in six movements, I think there is some connection to a kind of a six-movement Baroque suite.
That's right. Yeah.
Although I wouldn't push that too far. I think he took that as a jumping-off point, and boy, did he jump far. So it does begin with a very impassioned sort of prelude to everything, which starts out really in one key and then finishes in A major in a way that leads into the A major intermezzo so perfectly, which is one of the reasons I think he really meant for this to be played as a set. Mm-hmm. Then the second, you know, that intermezzo is really speaks for itself. It's so famous. But maybe because it's so famous, we can all already hear the second lines, the counter melodies, the things underneath, the voices inside, which Brahms works out so expertly and in a way that not only is the melody beautiful, but even the secondary melody or the tertiary melody, the ones underneath, are beautiful in and of themselves. Mm. The third movement is this ballade, very excited, very impassioned, but also with a calm and extremely lyrical middle section. And I'm not going to push my own personal storyline too far, but I think there is something in this particular set about love and about two souls finding each other and perhaps at the end losing each other. And the fourth movement in this set, which is also an intermezzo, I'd heard it a million times, and it was only when I started to actually play it myself about 10 years ago that I realized it was a canon from beginning to end. With one hand, the left hand following the right, with a few exceptions here and there for dramatic sake. So not only is it this perfect piece that works by itself, but it's actually this epitome of Baroque style, having been put together in a way that you don't notice the seams. Mm-hmm. And there is something about that fourth movement with the one hand kind of chasing the other and then an incredible moment of climax where they sort of come together and they've really joined each other. Mm-hmm. Without reading too much into that, it just so happens that the next movement is called a romance. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as far as I know, it's the only romance in Brahms's output. Mm. To me, one of the most beautiful movements that he wrote. Simple in that it repeats ideas over and over again with variation, but in such an incredible loving and pure way, so that the same themes are gone over again and again and again and again, but each time with just a different nuance, just a different twist, something else that you can adore about them. Mm-hmm. And then the last movement, probably the loneliest of Brahms's music, which is saying something, because mm-hmm. this is Brahms, mm-hmm. Begins with a very melancholy solo right hand melody, which is really nothing more than kind of playing around with a few notes and ending up in basically a sigh motive, a sort of da-da-da, that kind of mm-hmm. Letting the breath out.
What's the famous quote from Brahms? Einsam, aber frei, lonely but free.
Yeah, frei, aber einsam. Yeah, and there's something in this set very much about Brahms's, you know, einsam, you know, feeling, that feeling of oneness but alone. And it has both positive and negative sides. So that last piece is quite melancholy and quite lonely, and yet it has a absolutely triumphant middle section, which puts a lot of question as to just how bad is this loneliness. In the very end of the movement, he has that same descending sigh figure that he had at the beginning, but the inner voice rises stepwise in a scale. And the idea of creating your notes, whether your notes rise or descend, is very important. And it was certainly very important to Brahms. And the very simple version of it is rising notes are positive and descending notes have a negative connotation, mm-hmm. whatever that is, emotional connotation. And so that he puts this sighing motive, this terribly lonely sighing motive, together with a rising inner line, I think speaks to what is so wonderfully beautiful about Brahms, that he, in the face of the things that we find the most difficult in life, he seemed to always love being alive.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Festival Showcase on Aspen Public Radio. I'm host Matt Erickson, speaking now to pianist Orly Shaham, who will perform this evening as part of a 50th year anniversary for the Aspen Center for Physics. This is going to be a very busy week for you, because not only...
You're not kidding.
I was just looking at the calendar earlier today. I was like, whoa, Tuesday you're doing this concert. Then Wednesday you're doing the Bernstein, right?
Yes.
The Age of Anxiety.
Complete change of pace from the Brahms.
And it's a veritable concerto.
Basically. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so can you tell us a little bit more about, the scheduling for this and the piece itself? And why did you want to do the Bernstein with your husband, David Robertson, will be conducting this concert?
Yes. Well, I have to say that originally the scheduling was a little different.
Okay.
And Gil and I ended up switching our concerto dates.
Oh.
In one of those rare occurrences when those things at first look like they aren't going to work out and then they do.
Uh-huh.
So the scheduling was going to be a little more spaced out. But I love doing the Bernstein. I've done it many times. It's a great piece. And, of course, with the theme of the festival this year, Made in America, it's kind of the perfect showcase.
And I should say this is the symphony that's titled Age of Anxiety, and the piano part's very jazzy.
Much of it is very jazzy. Some of it is quite contrapuntal as well. And, you know, it's Bernstein was such a brilliant composer. Every time I play this piece, I think, you know, how did he come up with that? and I find it essentially the piece plays itself in two very large sections, although it's broken into more sections than that. And I find the first one to be so powerful, so much so that almost always when you play it, there's applause at the end of the first movement. And I think Bernstein really wanted that. That's what he was going for. And you have a kind of a deeper dirge. The poem itself, if you've read
Auden.
Yeah, Auden's Age of Anxiety. I mean, it's not a poem. It's an epic tome. It's, I can't remember it now anymore. It's like 140 pages long, you know, in most editions. I mean, it's huge. And it's incredibly depressing and very dense. And I think Bernstein captures a lot of the spirit of that without taking any of the specifics of the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And then my favorite section always is the mask, which is the really jazzy part. And that section comes directly from a section in the poem where all of the members of this party who are spending the evening together are all quite drunk and have made it into this lady's apartment. And all sorts of things are going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what happens. And it's really, that part is scored just for piano and percussion, including harp. And it has very cool, jazzy things that only Bernstein really could do, you know, along with all the rest of it. And it's just so exciting. It's one of those bits of music where you just can't slow down.
Wow. So it's going to be a packed couple of days, but it sounds like a really exciting...
And I'm headed to Salida on Saturday as well to play a recital.
And tell us more about your program for this one.
I'll be playing the same Brahms Opus 118s there. I'm also playing Mussorgsky Pictures at an Exhibition, which I did here in Aspen last summer.
Right.
And I'll be playing some etudes by William Bulkham, part of the Made in America idea. And these are wonderful pieces that I've really enjoyed getting to know this past season.
Anything special that you're going to be doing with your family while you're here?
May I just say that we just discovered the Rec Center for the first time, ARC. And I don't know how I'm ever going to get work done ever again.
Okay.
That's a great place.
Good to know. And I'm sure they'll like to hear that too. Orly Shaham, always a pleasure for you to come by the Aspen Public Radio studios. Thank you so much.
Mine. Thank you.